On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Have you ever heard of the poem Dark-Haired Miriam Ran Away? You probably have, even if you don't know it, because it first appeared in print 75 years ago this year, but it's better known now by a different name, which is On Raglan Road. Last year it was voted Ireland's favourite song, but it began life very differently. It's a poem about love lost. It was the masterpiece of Patrick Kavanagh. A lot of us might have done it for our leaving certs or even just come across it at some other stage. For a poet so synonymous with his own native rural Monaghan and Inniskeen and July roads and country evenings, a lot of his poetry was written about the urban environment of Dublin. But who was the girl that got away? And how exactly did a poem become such an iconic song? Well, Donald Fallon, hopefully, can tell us this Sunday lunchtime. Donald, how are you?
Good to be here. Always time for a little poetry on a Sunday morning.
Sure, to keep us going one way or another. It's a poem which is included in anthologies today, but it did begin life very, very differently.
I think it's remarkable that when Raglan Road first appears in print 75 years ago, it's in the pages of a newspaper, the Irish Press. So imagine buying your daily newspaper and seeing a masterpiece like Raglan Road. And I think that says a lot about the kind of precarious life of a poet, you know, in 1940s Ireland, that, you know, trying to get by for Patrick Cannon and his generation meant, you know, your poems appearing in daily newspapers. You know, life was a real economic struggle for him. And I think while we associate his name with a few of the leafiest streets in Dublin, like Raglan Road, it is important to say he never owned a house on any of them. The plaques in places like Pembroke Road and Raglan Road basically just mark places that he abided for brief periods, moving on when he could kind of no longer pay the rent. So these were places that he knew only as a lodger and a struggling lodger at that. But thankfully, it was that part of Dublin 4 that gave us the circumstances for this beautiful, beautiful poem. And the story of Raglan Road, I love it because it touches on so much of 20th century Ireland, you know, a now defunct but very important newspaper in its day, the Irish Press, John Charles McQuaid, Luke Kelly, even Fianna Fáil Minister Donna O'Malley, for it was his sweetheart, Hilda, who Kavanagh penned this kind of love letter of sorts to.
Sorry, so
it was just a great story.
It was Mrs. Donna O'Malley who was actually the inspiration of the poem.
Which is remarkable. So there's just so much going on about mid-20th century Ireland in the story of this great poem.
Yeah, just for the record, for listeners from Limerick, because Owen O'Malley, his grandson, is a regular guest on the show, he would have you insist that it's Dunnock O'Malley, the way it's pronounced down yonder. But we'll adopt the Leinster pronunciation and just say Dunnock for convenience. We mentioned that for someone who, for a lot of his poetry, is about Dublin, Kavanagh was Monaghan born and very shaped by it.
Yeah, I can hear people across the rest of the country shouting at the radio saying, you know, Raglan Road is not his masterpiece, The Great Hunger is. But you know, for me, I maintain it's Raglan Road. But Kavanagh was very shaped by his upbringing in Monaghan, Inniskeen, in 1904. And a lot of his early poetry kind of reflects that rural upbringing and early working life as a farmer, poems like The Ploughman. And he kind of envisioned himself, I think, early on in his youth as a kind of peasant poet, you know, someone from the land who wrote about the land. And while he could be very hard on himself, very difficult on himself, praise is plentiful. I think the best praise of him comes from John McGahern, who kind of nailed what was special about Kavanagh, that he wrote in the language of every day. And McGahern just nailed it. He said he had an individual vision, a vigorous gift of catching the rhythms of ordinary speech, and was able to bring the images that move us into light without patronage and on an equal footing with any great work. So Kavanagh may have come from the bog, so to speak, but, you know, he was able to capture the human experience in it.
And when he left the bog, and he literally left it behind him, he did go on an incredible journey because he did literally walk away from it.
I find this amazing. One contemporary describes him as a small farmer in Monaghan whose verses have a wild and original fire in them. And he's getting these kind of letters from Dublin saying, there's something about you. You know, you're very good. You need to have a go at this. And he leaves Monaghan 27 years of age in his early 30s and walks to Dublin. Like, he literally starts walking, which is an incredible journey. I mean, it's like a pilgrimage of sorts. But he didn't do this as some kind of great poetic act, you know, I'm walking to the capital. He did it because he couldn't afford it any other way. It was the only way he could get to Dublin was to walk. And then he lodges on the floor of his brother, who's a school teacher in Dublin. So I find that amazing to picture that, you know, one of the most celebrated poets of the 20th century walking towards the capital. But he discovered that, you know, if farming in Monaghan was a hard way to make a living, it was also very hard to make a living as a poet and a journalist in Dublin. And the relationship is kind of rocky. You know, he gets here and he meets all these professional poets, if you want to call them that, the literary set. And as one of his biographers puts them to him, they were just dandies, journalists and civil servants playing at art. So he really
like Flann O'Brien that we were talking about last
absolutely,
week.
Absolutely, yeah. like Flann O'Brien, you know, permanently super glued to the bar of the palace that we talked about last week. So he kind of felt a little bit out of place when he made it to Dublin.
And it was a bit of a love-hate relationship that he did end up having with the capital. But as you said, it might have been hard work, but at least there was work for a poet in Dublin.
It was the only work. And he's kind of publishing all the time in various Dublin literary magazines, periodicals, newspapers. You get a couple of quid for getting a poem into a newspaper. So his day is this struggle of getting something into print and getting paid for it. But he pops up in weird places. He gets a job with the Catholic Standard newspaper, which was this strange newspaper in its day. It was like hyperbole about communism, you know, denunciation of mainstream culture, the cinema, all kinds of mad things. Mm. And for whatever reason, John Charles McQuaid, the Catholic Archbishop of Dublin, took a liking to Kavanagh's work. I think he liked it because it was rural. You know, it wasn't cosmopolitan or metropolitan. Mm. It was the land, the people. And he gets him a job with the Catholic Standard. And Kavanagh jokes about that. He says, you couldn't work for a so-called Catholic newspaper without being an atheist. But it kept the wolf from the door. So this struggling Monaghan poet is, you know, penning reviews and you know, literary articles for the Catholic Standard of all things.
And to bring us then back to the topic of today's slot, in the midst of all of this, he meets a woman who is two decades younger than himself, and he's just completely transfixed by her.
Yeah, by the mid-40s, Kavanagh is in his mid-40s, and he's a struggling poet. He's moving through apartments and flats in Bagotonia, as they call it, the area around Bagot Street. It's just bed sits, it's flatland.
I've never heard that name before. Bagotonia,
yeah,
I love that.
Bagotonia is like the bohemian kind of 40s and 50s, where every writer wanted to be in that kind of little pocket of Dublin.
Now it's just the government quarter, because every government department has an office somewhere nearby.
It's just embassies everywhere. And ironically, the house that Kavanagh lived in, which was a damp bed sit on Raglan Road, is now a beautiful embassy. It's a Mexican embassy. But in that area, Kavanagh first encounters this young woman, Hilda Moriarty. Medical student from Dingle, stunningly beautiful, but I think more importantly to Kavanagh, very, very clever, brains and beauty. He befriends her, they kind of meet up regularly, but his behaviour is really, really, really erratic. And one of his great biographers, Antoinette Quinn, she goes as far as to say, he came to know all her haunts and stalked her. You know, I think in the days of social media, he might have been cancelled, but he was totally obsessive. And in the way that Irish people can kind of casually say, if you're ever passing through so-and-so, you should drop in and visit me and my family. Hilda says to him, if you're ever passing through Dingle, visit the family home. And then he just shows up unannounced. So he went everywhere. And he learned every cafe that she went to, you know, every bar she frequented, even the family homestead in Dingle. Kavanagh just followed young Hilda absolutely everywhere.
You've dug out one of the letters that he sent to her as well. And it's it's odd. Odd, I think, is the best description I can find for it.
Well, look, I think if it was sent on the modern... in the modern world, you'd hit the unsend button fairly quickly on it. But he writes to her, my dearest Hilda, please do not take exception to the address of dearest or think it a presumption on my part. I am no longer mad about you, although I do like you very, very much. I like you because of your enchanting selfishness, and I really am your friend, if you will let me be. I should not perhaps write this letter to you without you replying to my other, but I am in such a good humour regarding you that I want you to know it. Absolutely remarkable. Yeah. I mean, imagine Patrick Kavanagh on Tinder. Yeah.
But you haven't written back to my last text message, but I like you so much. I'm going to send you another one and just let you know anyway.
Here's another one, but I'm no longer mad about you.
Yeah.
And this infatuation with this kind of young student who he kind of observes moving through Dublin 4. I mean, it ran really, really deep. But you have to remember, this woman is in her early 20s. You know, her whole life is ahead of her.
Yeah, her heart, as we mentioned at the start, goes somewhere entirely differently.
Yeah, Donagh O'Malley, 1947, she marries Donagh O'Malley. And what a powerhouse name in Irish politics.
Yeah, everyone remembers him for one reason, don't they?
Yeah, and the family name, O'Malley. But he became kind of known affectionately as the schoolman in Irish politics. Brilliant, far-reaching reform in our educational system, free education, even revolutionised school transport so people could get to school, which was very, very important. And I think, you know, O'Malley, he's respected across the political board. He opened probably more doors than any other politician in 20th century Irish history, doors that our people had closed. And these two men, Kavanagh and O'Malley, what I like about them is they both assume very important places in Irish history. Kavanagh introduced so many people to poetry, and O'Malley, on one level, you know, kept us in school long enough to enjoy it and appreciate poetry. But yeah, her heart went with Donagh O'Malley and not with Kavanagh. It's worth saying, O'Malley, I don't think ever felt threatened by Kavanagh.
No, I'm sure they came from slightly different worlds anyway. So he always probably thought he had a slight advantage when it came to her anyway. How did it all end up with Luke Kelly getting his hands on this then?
In the Bailey pub, Kavanagh meets Luke Kelly, this kind of young, red-headed balladeer.
I really shouldn't be surprised that this starts with Bailey pub.
On Duke Street, the Bailey pub, still there. Yeah. More of a restaurant than a pub today. But he encounters Luke Kelly, who's, you know, this kind of up-and-coming singer who knows everything. All these English folk revival songs he'd learned from Ewan McCall, you know, Robert Burns poems from Scotland. But he's a great appreciation for Irish poetry. Kavanagh teaches him the words and says, I want you to sing this to the tune of the dawning of the day. And then, considering this thing was voted Ireland's favourite song last year, it's released by the Dubliners as a B-side. To Scorn Not as Simplicity.
Really?
It's the B-side. Wow. So it goes to show you should always turn the record over.
Yeah.
You never know what the B-side will be like. But this incredible poem, it's the B-side to Scorn Not as Simplicity, another great song
by
Phil Coulter. So Phil Coulter on one side and Paddy Kavanagh on the flip side.
Yeah, which says an awful lot about Kavanagh, that even his best work was probably in its time only considered to be the B-side to someone else's work. I kind of like the poetry of that too. What is quite touching about all of this, though, is that Hilda, despite, you know, being the object of perhaps some unwanted affection, never really forgot about her suitor either.
She sent a wreath of roses when he passed. And then in latter years, because she was so much, 20 years you know, younger than Kavanagh, so she was around for a long time after Kavanagh's passing. And I always spoke of him with kind of fondness, but some degree of kind of polite amusement as well. And some of that survives in the RTE archives. But I think she knew in her heart that she had become a part of kind of literary history by inspiring that poem. And I do like to imagine, you know, how did she feel 75 years ago this year when she opened the Irish Press and saw it? Could she find herself in it? Was there much chatter about it in town? But then what's a really nice conclusion to this is that on the morning of her own burial in the early 1990s, the Taoiseach of the day, I think it was Charles Haughey, 1991, read on Raglan Road the poem that Kavanagh had written about Hilda into the record of the Dáil. So, you know, it may have only been a B-side to the Dubliners when it first came out, but it is there forever now in the record of the Oireachtas.
And it certainly stands the test of time. We'll play out with it in just a couple of minutes. Donal, fascinating stuff. Thank you very much as ever. Donal Fallon, historian, author of the Come Here to Me books and presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast, a podcast about Dublin history, which probably has taken in its time some mention of Raglan Road as well.